Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste by going to rbnhemppaste.com.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound pack package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113, drinksupertea.com.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop-in lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to EaseOff.com. That's EazeOff.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Ease-Off, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these 5 easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your 5 easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our 5 easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio. Only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations A new world order.
New world order.
New world order.
This is a moment to seize. The kaleidoscope has been shaken. The pieces are in flux. Soon they will settle again. Before they do, let us reorder this world around us.
A new world order.
A world where the United Nations is poised to fulfill the historic vision of its founders.
Nevertheless, the United States is in a key position to shape this so that the problem of the Bush presidency will be the emergence of a new international order.
The first decade of the 21st century, that out of what is will be seen as the greatest restructuring of the global economy, greatest restructuring of the global economy, greatest restructuring of the global economy, a new world order was created.
Documenting the crisis of our republic.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings.
Waging war on the new world order.
The councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
This is Govern America with Darren Weeks and Vicki Davis.
From FEMA Regions 5 and 10, this is the third and final hour of Govern America. Vicki Davis is here. I'm Darren Weeks, and it continues to be the 30th of March, 2024, as we get right back into the show here. We've talked a lot on this show, and as we do often on this broadcast, about homeland security issues and issues relating to all the illegal aliens and all the crime that's being allowed, facilitated, encouraged, actually, to come into our country. And the importance of the Second Amendment has never been more pronounced. It's never been more prominent as it is today, because the other side would love to be able to have you be lay down and be a good victim, I think would be the good model that they would often, they wouldn't say overtly, but certainly by their actions, they're saying that. And we're seeing more and more of these public displays of violence as the nation has drifted away from God. And we're seeing a lot of these different things everywhere. And for this type of thing to go on indicates a level of evil that is just mind-blowing. And the other side capitalizes upon this and uses it to try to take away our weapons, to take away our self-defense, our right to keep and bear arms, to attack Second Amendment rights. So we're going to be talking about that some today with Stephen Williford. He's joining us right now. Stephen came to prominence by stopping one of these active shooter situations. And so it's an incredible story, and I'd love to have him tell it here. Stephen, welcome to Govern America.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I got my co-host Vicki Davis on the line as well. Say hi, Vicki.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing this.
Yeah, so why don't you start at the beginning, Stephen? I think your story, in fact, there was a lot more to it than I had originally heard. It was pretty incredible. And so I'd like you to start at the beginning. I guess you were preparing for an extra long shift. You work at a hospital? Is that correct?
I worked at a hospital, University Hospital in San Antonio, Texas, and one out of every 8 weeks we were going to have to do what's called a on-call, meaning I had to carry a pager home with me and work anywhere in the night. Just whenever they had a plumbing emergency, they would call me and I would come in at all hours of the night, because during the day they had a day shift, so it was definitely going to be late and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I stayed home to try to rest up, and at about 11:15 in the morning, my daughter came into my room and said, "Dad, doesn't that sound like gunfire?" When she made me aware of it, I ran to my safe. I grabbed an AR-15, a handful of ammunition, sticking it in a magazine as I ran across the street. And I ran across the street. I yelled out, and I truly believe God called out a demon, because he was in the church. He had started shooting through the windows and the walls of a 100-year-old.
Now, how far away was this church from your house?
From my front door to the front door of the church, it's an estimated about 100 yards.
Okay.
And I tell people, if you see this much bat running down the road, there's something serious going on. But at about 50 yards away, I yelled out. He came out of the church. He had just shot Julie Workman. They were hiding under the pews. He shot Julie Workman through the breast and bounced one off of the concrete floor and into her leg. And he shot Chris Workman in the back and instantly paralyzing Chris. And Chris said he was looking down the barrel of his pistol when he heard me yell.
Wow.
He instantly dropped his rifle and headed out and started shooting at me with a pistol.
Now, you had said you had some kind of tactical training in the past. Is that correct?
Well, I was a shooting instructor. I used to teach self-defense classes with a pistol. I used to compete as a rifle and pistol competitor. Mm-hmm. And I used to do quite well. As a matter of fact, the rifle that I built, it was an AR-15. It was made to compete. I built it myself, and I made it light, easy to handle, because if you're not shooting and moving in a real gunfight, if you're just standing in one spot shooting at a target, you are the target. You just haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
so now your daughter came to you and told you, you know, she thought she sounded heard gunfire. I think you said you came into the kitchen. And at some point, she actually left the house and went toward the gunfire, didn't she?
She did. She ran out, jumped in her car, and drove up the street to find out what was going on.
Wow.
And,
that's pretty courageous on her part, actually.
Well, I really chewed her out real badly about that later. I said, I can't believe you ran outside. I can't believe you ran into gunfire. And you didn't have a gun on you, and I just really raked her over the coals until she was in tears.
Mm.
And one of my friends, after it was done, and I walked out of that room, and she was in tears, he looked at me and said, you need to go back in and apologize to your daughter. I said, do you know what she did? He said, I do. Her problem is she's too much like her old man.
That's what I was
thinking. Go back in there and apologize.
That's just what I was thinking. Same genes, you know, chip off the old block kind of thing. So she came back and confirmed to you that it was a man in tactical gear, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So you headed over to the church. Go ahead.
You called 911. She said, I did. And right away, I was more afraid of police than I was the shooter himself, because they were coming to a mass shooting, and they were coming hard and fast, and I was running across the street barefoot with an AR-15, and when the police got there, what were they going to think?
Yeah, that's I wonder how many people who do heroic things, who try to stop these things, and that's got to be playing on your mind if you're a reasonable person.
Well, I decided the very first thing, if I saw a police cruiser, I was going to toss the rifle. I was going to hit the ground with my arms spread out and start yelling, he's still in there. And hopefully they would have heard the gunfire inside and went to that. But, you know, I'm in a little bitty community, under 600 people,
mm-hmm.
and we're way off the grid. We don't have a police officer in Sutherland Springs. We are part of the county, so we have to wait for the sheriff's department to react, and there's no telling how far out. Turned out that day, from the first 911 call until they finally hung up the 911 call because they heard sirens, was 19 minutes. It took the police 19 minutes.
Wow.
And my community didn't have another 19 minutes left.
No, everybody would be gone by 19 minutes.
I engaged the shooter. I hit him 6 out of 6 rounds. He hit the truck in front of me. I ran into a truck for cover. He hit the truck in front of me, shattered the windshield of the car behind me, and he hit the house behind me. And I put 6 out of 6 rounds on him. He had on Class 3 body armor and a ballistic bulletproof helmet. And most of my rounds went into the body armor, but the others hit him actually where it counted. I hit between the plates. When he turned to his side, I realized he had plates. And I hit between the plates when he turned to his side. I hit him high in the legs. I busted one across his forehead right underneath the helmet. He fled the scene, and as he was fleeing, I ran out in the middle of the street. It was about 150 yards away. The last shot I took, it went through the back windshield, and the driver's side seat hit him right at the left shoulder blade. He topped the hill and out of sight, and I flagged down a truck, and we chased him 11.6 miles. And in the end, he committed suicide. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I think he was coughing up his own blood, but he committed suicide, and I'm all right.
So this motorist that you flagged down, was he aware of what had happened at the church?
Absolutely. He was sitting at the stop sign and witnessed the whole thing. He was on 911 with dispatch at the time.
Okay.
And so the whole time he was driving well over 100 miles per hour, he was on dispatch telling them where we were.
Mm-hmm.
What Johnny did was an amazing thing.
And that Johnny's the driver of the pickup truck?
Driver of the pickup truck, his name is Johnny Langendorf, and I never want to, you know, he didn't know me. I'd never met him before, and I tapped on the window. He had just witnessed a shootout. I tapped on the window and said, that guy just shot up the Baptist church. We got to stop him.
Mm.
Johnny allowed me in his truck, and we chased down the road. And again, I had never met him. That was quite courageous of Johnny to do, especially when we're going down the road and I dropped the magazine out of my rifle and realized I only have two shots left. I told Johnny, tell them, hurry, hurry. I have two rounds left, and he's still got on Class 3 body armor.
Now, you're chasing this guy down after having basically had a firefight with him. And I think I remember hearing you say somewhere that he was driving like 85 miles an hour or something. So you're in hot pursuit at this point, trying to catch this guy to make sure he doesn't get away. And
yes.
So how long did you pursue him for?
Well, we chased him 11.6 miles, according to the sheriff's department.
Okay.
Now, 11.6 miles goes pretty fast when you're doing close to 100 miles per hour.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
it's an incredible story.
Yeah, it is an incredible story. Now once you've caught... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I have a book out. It's called A Town Called Sutherland Springs. And you can find it at Amazon. You can also go to gunowners.org, sign up to help fight for your rights to be able to defend yourself, gunowners.org. And you can find my book at gunowners.org, or you can find it at Amazon.
Sounds good.
Or you can go to the Barefoot Defender, which is my own website, and it'll have a link to Amazon.
Okay, very good. Yeah, and we'll definitely link to that, you know, in the show notes of the broadcast today. So you're pursuing 11 plus miles, at 85 miles an hour, and I guess you finally catch up to the perpetrator.
Well, he started slowing down. I truly believe that he was coughing up his own blood. And when he realized that we were chasing him, he slowed down. He pulled off into the ditch beside the road, and Johnny pulled up beside him. I opened the door, and I stuck the rifle out the passenger side window. I was going to step out, use the door as a shield and re-engage him.
Mm-hmm.
But before I had a chance, he accelerated, took a sign out, the road sign that was in front of him, and back up on the road, I barely got my foot in, and then Johnny was after him once again. This time we chased him about 3/4 mile more up the road. He swerved off the road, through a fence, and out into a field, and I guess that's when he committed suicide, because that's what the police said. He tucked the pistol up underneath his helmet and pulled the trigger and committed suicide, and I'm okay with that.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. That's certainly understandable. Now, but there was a standoff. You didn't know right away that he had committed suicide. And once he went...
I never heard the shot. I never heard the shot. So I was standing behind Johnny's truck. And I told him, just get down below the dash. And Johnny got out and started videoing, live streaming to Facebook. And it took the police between 5 and 7 more minutes before they reached us. An officer came over a PA system, said, driver, get out of the vehicle with your hands up. And I turned and looked off to my left, and about 50 yards more up the road was the officer, and he keyed the mic again. He said, driver, get out of the vehicle with your hands up. I laid the rifle on the hood of Johnny's truck and started walking back toward the back of Johnny's truck with my arms out and my hands up, palms out. And he looked at me, the officer looked at me, keyed the mic again. He said, not you. And I didn't know whether the officer knew who I was. I didn't know.
Yeah, absolutely. You're afraid of getting shot yourself.
I didn't want to be shot by the officer. He was about 100 yards from the murderer. I was 50 yards from the murderer. I had a rifle. He had a pistol. So I returned to my rifle and continued to point it downrange at the SUV that the killer was in. And they kept me down at the crash scene for 4.5 hours while they investigated and stuff. They never arrested me. Thank God I'm in Texas. It might have gone down so much different in New York or California.
Yeah.
I am in Texas. They took my rifle for evidence, and then the Texas Rangers brought me to a, it's called RIOT, which is Robbery Investigation of Texas. They took me to a big seminar, and they awarded me a brand-new rifle. And then 11 months later, I got my own rifle back, too.
Yeah, wow, what a story. Now, you mentioned, you alluded, thank God I'm in Texas. And I know it's playing, and it has played through your mind, that this could very well have turned out much, much differently had you been in a, let's just say, a heavily Democratic-controlled state where they aren't as friendly to people defending themselves. They actively pursue. It's like everything is turned on its head. They pursue people who shoot criminals and engage in self-defense. So you were always treated with respect by the officers?
From the start, I was respected by the police officers. As a matter of fact, that night, the sheriff of Wilson County got on for an interview, and he said, had one of my officers showed up on scene, they may have gotten killed. But Mr. Williford took care of what needed to happen. He had said that from the get-go. When I was walking back to my wife's car from the crash scene, they told me I could go home, and I was walking back, and it was about 200 yards to where they had the roadblock set up, and I could see my wife's car there, and I was walking back, and a lady came up behind me, said, Mr. Williford, I need to speak with you for a minute. And I turned around, a very pleasant-looking lady about my age was crying. And she came up to me, and I said, she said, I had friends in that church. And I said, how bad was it? She said, it was really bad. And then she said, but I want to thank you, and I want to offer you my card. If I can do anything to help you, I'm the DA of Wilson County.
Oh, wow.
So
wow.
The district attorney was there.
Wow.
Offered me her card, and I was like, oh, that's my get-out-of-jail free card.
Yeah, quite literally.
So, quite literally. She had me in the palm of her hand. She could do whatever she wanted with me. I truly believe that even if I would have been arrested and prosecuted or anything else, I truly believe that I would have gotten out, but because of her, I was never tried. It never even went to a grand jury. I was just totally released, and from that point on, I was held up as a hero.
And you are.
The Well, yeah, the Texas,
that's as it should be.
Yes.
Well, the lieutenant governor of Texas came down to meet me the next day. And he said, Mr. Williford, we're going to treat you as if you're an officer in a shootout. We are going to demand that you take off personal time off and that you're going to go through the counseling from the Texas Rangers counselor. And I said, the hospital I work for doesn't answer to the state. And he said, I'm going to go talk to the CEO of University Hospital next. And he said, I'm sure he'll see it our way, even if the state of Texas has to pay your wages while you're off.
Mm-hmm.
And so the hospital CEO called me right after the lieutenant governor called, had a meeting with him. And this was on November 6th. And the CEO of the hospital told me, don't even think about coming to work until after the first of the year, and your wages will be paid.
Wow.
So Texas took care of me in ways that, now I did return to work after about 3 weeks because I couldn't sit at home. I needed a bit of normalcy.
Yeah. I heard that the FBI and was it the FBI and the ATF paid you a visit after this was over?
Yes. Well, the ATF paid me a visit when I was down at the crash scene. The FBI and Homeland Security paid me a visit at my home shortly after I walked into my house. The doorbell rang. I had walked over to get a drink of water because adrenaline had worn off and my mouth was just pasty dry. I went over to get a glass of water. The doorbell rang, and my daughter yelled out, Dad, the FBI or the Homeland Security and FBI are here to speak with you.
Yeah.
And and she said, I never thought I'd ever say that before. And one of my friends said, well, we knew that was coming sooner or later anyway. You know, it's one of those friends that just harass you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's only a matter of time.
Yes.
Hey, I got a hard break coming up here. Can you hang around for a few minutes after the break?
I can.
Okay, all right. We're visiting with Stephen Williford. He is called the Barefoot Defender. He's a spokesman now for the Gun Owners of America, GOA. I think it's .org. And he has got a book, A Town Called Southern Springs. And we'll link to that in the show notes. But we're visiting about his circumstance, his situation with stopping a mass shooting event in progress. And I want to get a few more details about that after we come back for the break. Stay with us. This is Govern America. Don't go away.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop-in lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Ease-Off, LLC, 417-932-6419.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. After taking Extendivite for about 6 months, I've noticed improvement on the numbness of my hands and wrists from the carpal tunnel syndrome. I will continue to buy product. This formula is very powerful. I am feeling much better. My heart rate and blood pressure is stabilized, my lower edema has reduced, and lower leg pain due to blood clots has disappeared. This product has relieved what appears to be an angina problem. pain in the chest after climbing stairs, and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org. T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
Go to find out what's really going on. This is Govern America.
All right, we're in the home stretch of the broadcast. One more half hour to go here on Govern America, visiting with Stephen Williford from Gun Owners of America. And I think I might have given out the wrong address for Gun Owners of America. You want to go ahead and give that information out again, Stephen?
It is gunowners.org.
All right. And
gunowners.org.
And your website and how people can get your book?
The Barefoot Defender. You can get to my book at The Barefoot Defender, or you can go to Amazon and look up a town called Sutherland Springs, or you can order it from gunowners.org. And I'd like to also say that we're having our first annual convention in Knoxville, Tennessee, on August 17th and 18th. Please come to Knoxville, Tennessee. Big venue. We're going to have like 500 booths. We're going to have lots of good speakers and stuff, and meet the manufacturers and the people that design firearms. And it's just going to be a great time.
Yeah, I think people who are gun owners are some of the most respectful people, and certainly they're people who are, you know, the media likes to paint conservatives in general as reckless, crazy people who just, you know, will shoot up a place or something, but you teach responsible gun handling. Can you elaborate a little bit on that and talk about how you know, the whole process of discipline and the mindset involved in training and teaching proper, you know, firearm safety?
I used to run a youth shooting league, and one of my shooters actually set women's collegiate national record with a pistol.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the discipline and stuff, I truly believe, you know, they talk about sporting being a discipline that teaches responsibility. Well, firearms is even more so, because they understand the gun and the devastation a gun can do if handled irresponsibly. So it teaches even young people very much how to handle a gun responsibly. This young lady went on, she won junior national championships and then went to, got her appointment to West Point where she shot for the U.S. shooting team and set a national record with a pistol. And how much more responsible do you get than that? Gun ownership is a responsibility. It is a right. It is not designated a right by our government. It is a right. Our Bill of Rights was given to us by God. And what the Second Amendment does is it restricts the government from having anything to do with restricting it. It restricts our government. It doesn't give us a right. It just recognizes a right that we already have.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and the states are trying to pass red flag laws now. And I don't know if you saw it or not, but Obama now has this, or Obama, I might as well be Obama,
Biden
now has this National Extreme Risk Protection Order Center, I guess, that is, looks to me like nationalizing the red flag laws. Have you looked at that at all? What do you think of red flag laws in general? Go ahead.
A red flag law is absolutely unconstitutional, and gun owners of America will fight that all the way to the end because it gets away from due process. We are guaranteed in this nation due process. We are guaranteed to be innocent until proven guilty. And if they can just come into your home just because someone said that they think you're dangerous, and they can come into your home and they can take all your guns away, and now you have to prove that you're no danger.
Yeah,
that is doing it totally away with due process. They are supposed to prove you are a danger, not you proving you're not. You know, that's a very significant difference. You know, we have the right to due process in this country. And just because an ex-wife or an ex-husband or something just says, oh, I think he's dangerous, you need to go get his gun. And now you've got to spend money on a lawyer and stuff just to get your guns back and to prove that you're not a danger?
Yeah, well, look at this situation where that you were involved in. Thankfully, I think you have a healthy marriage and a good wife. But if the situation hadn't been that way, you know, you could have been completely defenseless. And as it was, how many people died at the church?
26 people died and 20 more were shot and wounded. Only 3 people walked out of that church without a bullet in them.
Wow. Yeah, the situation could have been even worse. And how many other places would this guy...
That's my neighbors, my friends. I'm fourth generation on the same little piece of property here in Sutherland Springs. My great-grandfather bought this property in 1927. And I've been all my life a resident of Sutherland Springs, Texas, and I never want to go anywhere other than Sutherland Springs. And people say it wasn't my fight, and I say, oh, yes, it was. He came to my town, my community, and just thought he was going to murder people I cared about.
Yeah, I don't understand why people would say that it wasn't your fight. Maybe they're just saying that you didn't have to get involved, I suppose. And in fact, many people wouldn't get involved. It would have been very easy to just turn away and say, well, there's not much I can do. And yet, what compelled you? I know you have a deep faith in God. I know you're a fellow believer. Was it your faith in God in that moment? I mean, because
it was my faith in God, because if you know where you're going when you die, then you can live a whole lot more bold.
Mm-hmm.
And I truly believe that God called me in that moment. And, you know, I tell people, tomorrow comes. Your tomorrow will come. And what you need to realize is there's just a few things that can happen. Your tomorrow could be
six of your friends carrying you, putting you on over a hole in the ground. There's no guarantees in life, but except death. You are going to die someday, and it's not about how you die, but it's about how you live.
Yeah.
So your tomorrow could look like Scott Peterson's tomorrow. He's the resource officer at Parkland School that hit around a column while seven more children died. And now they call him the coward of Broward. So Scott Peterson has to live with that hung around his neck because he did nothing when he was called.
Yeah.
He looks at himself in the mirror every morning and says, "You coward, you did nothing while people were dying."
Yeah.
My today could be your tomorrow. And my today is, as I can wake up in the middle of the night and understand that I did the best I could to save as many people as I could, and I'm okay with that. I can sleep at night.
Yeah.
I can look at the man in the mirror the next morning. But had I done nothing, I think that is a fate worse than death itself.
Let me ask you this.
Meet my maker. I don't want to meet my God and him say, "Why didn't you do what I asked you to do when I asked you to do it?" I want to hear, "Well done, good and faithful servant."
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. What do you think of the, what do you think should be done about all of these mass shootings everywhere? The media is, you know, of course, the Democrats and some Republicans and of course, the establishment media all in about taking away people's firearms rights. And we know that when you do that, you're just taking away the firearms rights of the law abiding. But there is a problem we have in America. And with this, these mass shootings taking place everywhere, the criminals are still getting the guns, whether they're lawfully purchased and stolen or by other means, somehow they're getting the guns and they're making their way into these places and shooting them up. And we're hearing about it more and more all the time. What do we, as proponents of the Second Amendment, how do we handle this? How do we answer?
So people said, always say, "Where was your Second Amendment when this happened?" And my answer to them is, quit gutting the Second Amendment. Let it work the way that it's supposed to work. John Locke, Professor John Locke, Dr. John Locke, wrote a book, More Guns, Less Crime. And he's continued to get out there and do research. And he took the FBI's latest research. And what the FBI took is from 2007 to 2021. And they said less than 2% of all gun mass shootings are stopped by civilians, is what he said,
mm-hmm.
what the FBI said. Well, and that may be true, although it's quite skewed in the way they said it. John Locke took and figured out that 94% of mass shootings happen in gun-free zones, where a civilian like myself could not stop it. So he took out all the gun-free zones because legal, law-abiding citizens will not be able to stop something like that. So he takes out the gun-free zones, and from 2007 to 2021, and 2017 is in that, and that's when Sutherland Springs happened, so I'm figured into this. Between that time frame, it was 203 mass shootings happened in that time frame that were not in gun-free zones. And so he took that figure, and 103 of them, over 50%, were stopped by non-law enforcement civilians like myself. That's over 50%. Let that soak in for a while.
Yeah.
And out of that 103 that were stopped, out of that, there wasn't one innocent bystander that was hit by the good guy with a gun, the good guy or girl with a gun.
Mm-hmm.
Not one time. And law enforcement can't even claim that. So what needs to happen is you need to do away with gun-free zones. You need to train teachers. Don't force them to carry a gun. But those that would defend their schools with a gun, you need to train them. You need to allow them to carry in their class and in school. And if something like this ever happened, they said, "Oh, well, no one with a pistol could take on a mass shooter with a rifle, and I would beg to differ. It happens all the time. There was an incident at a graduation party where a guy broke out in an AR-15, started shooting in the crowd, and a young lady shot and killed him and stopped it with her pistol. I'm going to say it's very much possible, and if you train the students, if a mass shooter comes into this room, start throwing books and stuff at them, anything you can grab a hold of, start throwing them, and the teacher has a clear shot with nothing flying in his or her face.
Yeah.
So, more guns, less crime, just like John Locke said it.
Yeah.
And someone, if they are under gun with a pistol as opposed to a rifle, at least they have a fighting chance.
Yeah, exactly.
At least they, so one of the teachers that was murdered in Uvalde, she was a sheriff's officer, deputy. His wife was one of the teachers that got shot. You don't think she would have carried a gun in that classroom? Her husband was a deputy.
Yep.
She would have at least had a fighting chance.
Yeah, that's one thing that I worry about. My daughter, one of my daughters, is a school teacher. And she's dealing with these kids now who are, there's been a number of them that have come out and said things about shooting up a school. It's in the news all the time, and they're hearing it. So they're getting ideas. I live in Michigan, and so whenever I was up north one time camping, and somebody jumped off the Mackinac Bridge and committed suicide while we were camping up there, there was never a mention of that suicide in the news. Nobody ever said a word about it. And we asked around about it, and they said, yeah, that happens here occasionally, and they never talk about it because they don't want to encourage the type of activity and give people ideas. And yet we have the media doing the same thing, talking about this constantly in the news. I think they have blood on their hands, Stephen.
And that's why I never mention a shooter's name. I never give them what they want. They want to be remembered. I never give them what they want. And I would encourage everybody in the media to do the same thing. Their name isn't worth mentioning.
Yeah. Now, you talked about how long it took when you're in this situation. And I want to talk a little bit about the psychological effect on you, because the aftermath of something like this must have been tremendous. You mentioned that the police department allowed you to or facilitated, encouraged you to go through the counseling offered their officers by the Texas Rangers. This process of realizing what, the taking of a life, even if it's something so terribly evil, has to have some kind of an effect on you. Can you walk us through that process, how you went through that, and how you dealt with it emotionally after this whole thing was over and the dust settled?
Okay, I'm going to, discuss something that I don't discuss very often, because, yes, it does have a impact on you. And especially if you're a man of faith like I am, the very first conversation I had with my wife is, I think I killed a man. And my wife, being the incredibly wise, supportive woman that she is, she said, you did what you had to do. And I said, yes, but I didn't want to be that. And I referred to the Bible, when it talks about David. David was not allowed to build God's temple because he had blood on his hands. I wanted to be Solomon, known for my wisdom, not David, known as a warrior king. But then my wife reminded me that David, God said he was a man after his own heart. My wife said, if you're called to be David, why would you settle for being Solomon? And it has a lot to do, you don't ever want to But when God calls you in that moment to do whatever needs to be done, then step up and say, here I am, Lord. And so now I'm like David, and I stood and I met my Goliath. He had on class 3 body armor, ballistic bulletproof helmet. And I was barefoot. God made sure that I knew that I was not able to do this without him. I had no armor or anything, but God held my hand and steadied it. I put 6 out of 6 rounds on a man moving, shooting at me.
Mm.
And I was terrified and yet dead calm.
Yeah. A lot of people would say, how can you be terrified and have courage at the same time? But really, I don't think the two are mutually exclusive. I think you have to muster up the courage to do something like that. It's very courageous. But at the same time, when you're going through it, I mean, yeah, there's probably a lot of adrenaline, I would imagine. Go ahead.
The calm of it all was what surprised me. How could I be terrified like I was and yet dead calm? And I look back to the Bible scripture that says the peace that passes understanding.
Mm-hmm.
I was in an absolute moment of terror, and God had his hand on me and kept me calm and resolute and knowing what I had to do.
Yeah. Talk about your group that you were a part of, because you taught me something. I saw one of your other interviews where you were discussing the group that you were a part of that you called yourselves the Sinners. Can you explain that a little bit?
I was part of a church pistol team.
Okay.
We competed weekly with pistols, and we were a church team, all of us from the same church. And we had to have a name for our team, and we called ourselves the Sinners. And what sin in the Bible, the word sin in the Bible, came from an archery term meaning missing the target. And so it gave us an opportunity to share our faith and to make fun of ourselves and to let people know that just because you're a Christian doesn't mean you're perfect. We all have sinned and fallen short. And our Sinners became very good with our guns. And one of our Sinners was a former Army Ranger and a police officer in San Antonio. And he taught me when we were not shooting in competition, we would shoot together to sharpen our skills, and it was like golfing, but for men. And he would teach me what he learned in the Special Forces and San Antonio police officer and stuff. And so we spent 3 weeks training on what to do if ever confronted with body armor. I'm a plumber. Why would I need to know what to do if ever confronted with body armor? And I truly believe that God trained me for a moment knowing, because I think what living in eternity with God is in the Bible, if God isn't constricted by a timetable, he sees the past, the present, and the future all at one time.
Mm-hmm.
So he knew what I was going to need in the moment, and he trained me what I needed to know to shoot around body armor.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I had special instruction for that.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, do you have anything, Vicki, that you wanted to ask or say?
No, I'm just in awe of the idea of the preparation and then being ready, you know, when the situation presented itself and you didn't shirk, you know, from your duty.
Yeah.
I don't believe in coincidences. And the very hospital that I work for as a maintenance plumber, on that Sunday morning, was having an active shooting drill at the hospital where they called all the doctors and nurses in to do a drill and they were all complaining, why are we here at the hospital on a Sunday that we could be spending time with our families at church? Why are we here? And the real shooting came down. And since they were all there at the hospital, they were able to get 20 ORs up and running before the first shooting victim showed up.
Wow. That's amazing.
And that is no coincidence.
Well, well, we're just about out of time. But listen, I hope you'll come back on the show and discuss current events. I know that there, with all the crime that's being brought into the country right now, unfortunately, they're putting people into situations where it looks like they're going to be more and more types of, shall we say, opportunities to defend yourself. You know, guns are used every day to defend people. You know, we only hear about it on the news when there something goes wrong. You only hear about guns when in these mass shooting events, when their people are victimized by crime. You rarely ever hear about it in a positive light. That's why I launched a section on the website called Guns Save Lives, where I just started collecting stories. And there's certainly just it's a drop in the bucket as to what really is out there, because I don't have time to regularly look for them. But it's amazing. Every single day, you never hear about it. Guns save lives every single day. And that's what that's what people need to realize. Go
ahead. I can give you some contacts of other people that have saved themselves and others.
Yeah, absolutely.
Guns. We are a club now, or a whatever you want to call it, that we didn't ask to be in, that actually support one another. And I have been in contact with so many other people that have done things very similar to mine.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're out of time. But give your information real quick before we go off the air.
Please go to gunowners.org and sign up. Please go to The Barefoot Defender and look for my book on Amazon, A Town Called Sutherland Springs. And please buy the book, read the book.
Yeah.
Write a review.
Incredible story. Hey, thank you so much for being with us, Stephen. God bless you, sir.
Thank you. God bless.
Talk soon. Yeah, blessings to you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us. And join us back here next week, same time, same outlet. In the meantime, pray for this republic. Do what you can to restore it. God bless you, folks. We'll talk soon. Bye-bye.
Excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low-quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org. and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
Listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.